Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 370 for March 24th of 2017. We've got the head of Jeep Design. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
All right, Gary.
John, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome.
Sunny day, Jeep in the studio. What could be better?
It doesn't get much better than this.
It doesn't.
Not for doing shows like this.
Nope.
Hey, and we got to let everybody know we got Eric Lawrence here joining us for the first time from the Detroit Free Press. And great to have you, Eric.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And our special guest for the show is Mark Allen, the head of design for Jeep. That's a lot, man.
Luckiest guy in town.
Gotta be.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
The hottest brand in the business.
Yep. Yeah, a brand I love. Yeah.
Yeah. So how long have you been at FCA?
I've been there about 23 years this year.
Is that
year.
Your whole career?
Yep, yep. 23 years there, and I always wanted to be a car designer. I've never worked on a car.
I've never met a car designer who never wanted to be a car designer. When you were a kid.
I've never worked on a car. I've been pickup trucks and Jeeps my whole career. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. And that wasn't the dream, but it sure turned out good so far. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So how'd you become a Jeep guy?
I just got stuck in there so long.
Yeah. They said, you're a Jeep guy. And
yeah.
You said, okay.
Yeah, and I probably knew more about it than anybody else being the designer at the point that time. So I got lucky enough to get the job. Yeah.
So now we've got the Compass mm-hmm. here in the studio. So let's spend some time talking about this. And the first thing, I mean, very simple question. How did you come up with this design? I mean, what led to it looking the way that it does?
Well, the story starts really with how we did the facelift on the old Compass. We put a little bit of Grand Cherokee into it by mistake because we were kind of in a big hurry. And it really resonated, and it worked out well. So this the new vehicle, the desire was to put a lot of the handsome, square-jawed, good looks that are on the Grand Cherokee into a smaller, easier to get to package. And that's where we got to this. That was the driving force up front to make it look more premium than really that segment offers. So we did that. It's not a copy of a Grand Cherokee, but it's got a lot of that handsome good looks into it. So one of my favorite features is the black roof, which is an available thing that sort of brings the roof down, adds a little bit of sportiness to it. And I think it's going to be an option, but I think a lot of people are going to go for
it. So talk about that a minute. I mean, so that's uncharacteristic for Jeep, it seems to me. That I mean, we would see things like that on a Mini, let's say. I mean, as a design
You can get a Wrangler with a black roof, right?
Can you?
If you're cheap. Yeah.
But this is a shiny, nice, designed in.
We started doing it, honestly, on the Renegade. We put a black roof option on it. And it's... it probably is connected to back when you could get two-tone cars. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's looking for something new all the time. And it just seemed to work. It was in one of the original sketches, and it resonated with us. It breaks up the graphic of the vehicle from a long view so great. This vehicle ends up with kind of a shark fin to the C-pillar, mm-hmm. which I think is cool. But it's everybody's looking for the next edge. What's new and fresh in design? And you see a lot of activity right now with window graphics and trim and roofs. Yeah.
That's pretty interesting because, as you said, it's two-tone,
mm-hmm.
which means a two-step paint process. I'm sure you had some discussions with your manufacturing guys.
Not pleasant discussions.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, they weren't real happy about it.
This is after hours. You can use that language.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. But, again, when we started with Renegade, that was an even more difficult process. The engineers came up with something that they call it a wet-on-wet, the way they do it. I think they put both colors on and put the clear on over
on
all
of
it.
That. Yeah. Interesting.
But this, you know, it's particularly difficult here. This vehicle will be built in four different plants across the globe, so they all have to do that. You go to a different plant, and they use a different paint system. It complicates things beyond what I want to even consider. But it's worth it. I think it's a well worth it thing. The vehicle is very graphic, we call it, and it's the black on the bottom, the black mask to the front end, and then the upper. The result, I think, is like it's one of the best vehicles that looks, or it looks great in white, you know.
Which is hard to do.
Yeah.
In my book, at least.
Because half of the vehicle is black, I think, is why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much to it.
Well, what I never liked about white is they show every cut line.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
I just don't like that.
We've been working on getting those better, though, so they're starting to go away. Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about the shark fin?
Yeah.
It's also inside the vehicle, too.
Yeah. Thanks for paying attention.
Sure.
But the shark fin, the C-pillar, that shape, the interior designers picked that up.
So that's that little kick up above the rear wheel that you're talking about?
Right up behind the third piece of glass on the side.
Yeah.
It's got sort of a great thick fin shape to it.
Yeah,
Pointing rearward.
Yeah.
But the designers picked that up, and you have used it on the Air Vents and a few other pieces on the interior. It's nice. You know, we worked really great together back and forth with the interior designers. So, yeah, we're all actually really good friends. So you end up with a lot of really dirty talk, but it's good.
So is there a separate design studio that services all of the FCA brands, including Jeep, or are there Jeep guys who do interiors?
I've got Jeep guys doing interiors. They'll occasionally do other things depending on workload, but mostly dedicated Jeep guys. Mm-hmm. Certainly the exterior, I've got a bunch of Jeep guys
dedicated
to that. And we always try to ingrain in them a lot of the Jeep culture, which I think is key. Know how to take them out. If we can talk about Moab, but we'll take them out to Moab and teach them how to drive the vehicle correctly. That pays off such big dividends because then they're not questioning, well, why do I got to have all this approach angle or departure angle in the vehicle? Why has it got to sit high? And that having them work the vehicles correctly off-road, I think, is just huge for us.
And we should just add in real quick here, for those who don't know what Moab is, it's the greatest slick rock in the world out in Utah, and it's a great off-roading place.
Yeah, it's terrific. There's a big event that goes on there every year. In fact, we're prepping for it right now. It gets us out of the Detroit cold for a week, but it's sort of our proving grounds. We use Rubicon, honestly, for Wrangler, but for pretty much everything.
And you do a bunch of concept vehicles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We are building, I think, probably 5 or 6 right now.
Wow.
Yeah, which is cool. Moab is so great because there's sort of concept vehicles that I can have journalists drive. And in the setting of Moab, you can't ask for anything better.
So this is your Easter Jeep Safari that you guys do.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about, just to divert down that path for a minute here.
Yeah.
So you're talking about building 5 or 6 vehicles. Now, are you guys doing that in your garage at home, or are you doing that on site?
No. We do them at various locations, the actual build of them. But the design of them, actually before you even design, the thinking about and coming up with that will happen for next year. It'll happen while we're at Moab, when we're talking with customers and writing and looking around, getting ideas. And then throughout the summer, we're sketching them and developing these things. And then probably late in the fall, we'll go pitch to the management team. And they're pretty good about just going, saying, whatever you want to build, you build it. So,
well, you guys have come up with some really cool concepts. I don't know how you keep coming up with new ones all the
time. I don't either. Yeah, no. It's fun. We've probably made every different version of Wrangler possible. Made them shorter, longer, taller, wider. You pickup trucks. You name it. It's getting hard to do powertrains. Honestly, it used to be pretty easy to do powertrain swaps. That's getting more and more difficult beyond our capability anyway. But it's a great juice to just have guys think about Jeeps a little bit different every year. It's been terrific for us. And the payoff is we get all kinds of little nuggets that end up in production, whether you know it or not, when you see it out there. So, and don't tell anybody. It's actually quite a bit of fun, too. So, yeah, gets us out of the shop.
So you guys have been on a roll of late in terms of Jeeps. I mean, they seem to be coming out more quickly. I mean, it was Cherokee and then Renegade, now the Compass.
For the longest time, Jeep had 3 vehicles.
Right.
You know, when I started there, the Grand Cherokee was new. But it was Cherokee and Wrangler. There were pickup trucks and stuff. But for a long time, it was just three vehicles. We're lucky right now. The market, as you well know, has exploded into other things that are and John and I, we've had this conversation. I was told my whole career, you can't sell a five-door hatchback in this market, right? But if I jack it up a little bit and call it an SUV, voila. Right? Yeah. That's what this
the
car is, right?
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, apropos to what you're talking about, Dan Alpert, one of our viewers, wrote in to ask, how far can the Jeep name be stretched before it breaks? Can the Jeep brand stand up to making an electric version, for example?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jeep brand wasn't founded on what the powertrain was. It was founded on tractive capability. Where that power comes to get the power to the four wheels, I don't know that it really matters. But it does need to have some off-road chops to it. And we've been working hard to infuse like everything that we make with some Wrangler. That's always been the case. As long as we never lose focus of that, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, in fact, yeah. And I'm not trying to get you to say anything out of school here, because Mike Manley has said it. You guys are working on a Jeep that's smaller than the Renegade, and the Grand Wagoneer and Wagoneer are bigger than the Grand Cherokee. So, I mean, that's a lot of bandwidth for a brand.
Yep. I think we could do all of that and more, and we're just finding that out right now. The growth within Wrangler itself, it's growing, you know, as almost a sub-brand. We'll never take it apart. That would be death. But even the Compass Patriot, when those first came out, they were basically car-based SUVs. The acceptance of those was actually wider than I think we thought, and now we're getting back to those vehicles, the new Renegade and the new Compass. I think even a little bit more serious. We're putting the Trailhawk version in there, taking the off-road even more serious than before. So. Yeah, making car-based SUVs, car-based Jeeps, I think was a heresy a decade ago, but it's worked out pretty good for us. And that's a credit with Jeep engineering with that, because every time we throw them a curveball with, you know, be it aero or weight or something like that, they come screaming back and make it work. Pretty happy with the way that Jeep engineering works.
Mm-hmm. So. In addition to the 7-slot grille,
yeah.
What does the design of a Jeep require? So if somebody turns in a design to you, what are the cues that you look for?
Well, the 7-slot grille is really the trim, and I get asked all the time, like, would you consider something else? Like, hell no. People kill for that. For instance, an Alfa Romeo has to have that grille on the front. They've done cars without that, and shame on them. And we've done, you know, in the past 20 slots, 8 slots, we were all over the map. But the slotted grille has been there since day one. The trapezoidal wheel arches, we talk about that as a design feature on the vehicle. And if you don't know, that came from the very first flat fender where they just needed to keep the mud off of the General and they bent something over their knee and stuck it on the car. But it came from the front of that flat fender Jeep. Isn't that cool, though, that we still use that all the way 75 years later, those two elements?
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is pretty plastic. It can come and go and move around. But I like having, personally, as the designer, I like having that heritage always in the vehicles. It's constant. That I don't need to go searching for a different identity or grill or, you know, God, let's never change the logo. For instance, it's just Jeep. It's really basic. Humble beginnings for the brand.
Mm-hmm.
It was never meant to be a brand. And look where we're at today. I mean, it's just...
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
I get all choked up over Jeep. I really do.
Hey, let's come back to the Compass here.
Yeah.
Because and those black A-pillars, mm-hmm. I find that fascinating. In fact, the whole roof treatment, because behind the shark fin at the rear, you've kept it black.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... Instead of a chopped-off-looking rear end, it sort of flows out a little bit.
That's to hide the aero pieces the aero guys put on there. But, yeah, it's the black pieces you're talking about on the back are always black. They're never body color. But it does, having the two separated, and it is an option on there, but I think we'll sell most of them with the black roof. I just think it sets up a different profile for the car. And you'll see it. It's really the half-mile view, or not half-mile, but down-the-block view.
Where you know instantly it's a Jeep, you mean?
Yeah.
The black pillars I find interesting because that looks more European. That looks almost French to me. And, and I got to believe that's part of the
thinking. You mean good French, not bad French.
No, no, no. Listen, I own a French car, so I'm not disparaging it.
He eats French fries.
Yeah.
Yeah. French dressing.
But so clearly I think you're looking for not just a pure American design, but something that's American plus.
But I will always, you know, these things are all designed in my shop in Auburn Hills, Michigan, and exported to the world. It needs to be, we have this conversation with China all the time, it needs to be American vehicle exported to China, that those identifications. Like when I see a German vehicle, it's got to look like a German vehicle or your French vehicle. I want the same to be true of Jeep. There was a long time where vehicles that we exported to other countries, they looked slightly different. We're trying to work our way out of that, get a more worldwide look to the vehicles. So even the new Compass, there's really literally just tiny details in lighting that are different.
Mm-hmm. With the export models.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there one market that's more different in terms of those details?
I think there's some crazy, I want to say it's Malaysia or something, has some crazy license plate. You know, license plates are just, there's got to be 400 different sizes of license plates. That drives us crazy. But specific details, no. Lighting is getting pretty homogenous throughout the world. But it's mostly the add-on pieces.
Do you try to accommodate a design for the different license plates? Because, as you know, some license plates just look goofy on a car.
Yeah, yeah. They had those oval plates for a while, too, even in Europe. It's just you kind of stake out some real estate that all of them will fit on. Yeah, I figure if you've seen these, it's the front license plate bracket. I don't know how many holes are in those things. Mm-hmm. They're crazy. But that's the unpredictable part. I wish we could get to one size license plate worldwide. I know that's not going to happen.
Right. So we've got to take a quick break right here. Got to give a shout out to our friends at Lear. We're going to be talking quick about Jeep.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back with Mark Allen talking about Jeep design.
So, as you said, this segment is exploding all over the world. So how is it that you guys, from a design point of view, maintain Jeep's identity?
Yeah. We do a lot of sketching and a lot of talking and thinking about that, because it can be really great to have what I'm talking about, these design elements, they're constant, but it can also be a trap. You end up doing the same thing over and over again. It's just lots of discussions and sketching and moving, because you always want to move forward. But it's not an easy thing to do. And it depends on what you're working on. What the vehicle is, the size of it, even the market's going to go into.
Because it would seem to me that, you know, as you know, every single brand, I mean, Rolls-Royce coming out with an SUV, I mean, it's you know.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. Porsche has an SUV. Yeah.
Two.
Yeah, two.
Yeah. It's outselling their cars by a long
time. Look, if you want to sell cars in this business, you better have an SUV.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Bentley.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, I mean, it all goes back to what happened 75 years ago, right? I mean, and
we'll lay claim that we invented it, and it was really later on in the 50s. It was that Willy's wagon. When really, post-war, afterwards, they were selling Jeeps to farmers and stuff like that, and they just said we'll do a station wagon, and invented the SUV in my mind, the Willy's station wagon, because it had four-wheel drive to it and utility. But it was, I think, really just sort of dormant for a long time, and, you know, Suburbans, those kind of things. were not mainstream vehicles. God, they are now, though. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've changed, right? I mean, if you go back to those early ones, of course, not a lot of people bought them. They were trucks.
They were trucks.
I mean, they were like commercial-grade vehicles.
A lot of cars were trucks, too.
Well, they weren't so great. But, no one thought that, gosh, maybe people would like four doors on a pickup. Maybe people would like
it's
leather-wrapped interior on a Suburban.
Yeah, we can't find the top end of pickup truck. How nice can you make a pickup truck, right? They have every amenity and luxury that a car ever did. It's sort of replaced the big body on frame American car.
Absolutely
right?
Has.
So do you guys talk to the people in the Ram studio in terms of?
I don't talk to those guys.
You don't talk to those guys?
The hell with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because it would seem there'd be some commonality there in terms of what you're trying to accomplish, both exterior and interior.
You mean as far as just getting the brand message through?
Or? Well, or the thing of like somebody says, hey, we've got this idea for the steering wheel diameter or what have you, and it might work well in a truck as well as in a Jeep, or you might have this material we discovered really. Handles the dirt well, and you guys get dirty cars all the time, and we do sometimes too. And
if you're doing it right, it's dirty. Yeah, no, all the component sharing. We were talking about that earlier. Just pedals and steering columns and seat frames and all that stuff is incredibly expensive to redo all the time. It's best to share it, hide it, but the customer doesn't need to know what car gets what. Steering wheels, we probably share them, Durango and Grand Cherokee. They're certainly built side by side.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, we got another question here. Armand wrote in to say, we were talking about the concepts that you have at Moab.
Yep.
He says, is that where they have the biggest impact? Why not have them at a major auto show?
They do end up going to different auto shows. And it was Moab, the whole thing is just something we sort of backed our way into. We never really planned out, but it's worked out pretty good. But we will always debut the vehicles at Moab. That's the why we're doing them, and then take them to other auto shows. Those vehicles are really different than concept cars. And then when I was a kid, I was like, man, concept cars are really, I was just so about them and couldn't wait to be around them. They're actually pretty junky underneath. So the trick with the Moab vehicles is they've got to work. They've got to go off-road and be able to have full suspension flex and be able to get over the obstacles. And look good doing it. So they're real fully working vehicles. They're not something that just looks good on a stage. So with that, I mean, they get scraped and beat up and stuff, but I'm okay with them going to auto shows and showing me those scars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are you trying to accomplish in your design for those concept vehicles?
They're really just mostly to generate excitement and the payoff is really for the designers and my studio or the brand to show what can be done and try out different things. If we get it wrong on a Moab car, it's okay. It doesn't matter. But it generates a ton of excitement. The other good thing is we'll actually be driving them around on the rocks and in the mud out there and run into Jeep clubs. And what a great concept, conversation starter. People want to pull you over and stop and talk. And we hand them tchotchkes and stuff like that. But it's just connection with the customers, and it's the alpha people that really take their Jeeps and go off-road. We learn a lot from them, they don't know it, right? They're just having a good conversation with the men from the factory, so it's good.
So how many people from your staff go to Moab annually?
I try to take all of them.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, and we'll take up to 20-25 people, and it's just good. I mean, our intent just is to infect them. Right, with Jeep culture, Jeep lifestyle, it pays off huge. It's really good. Jeep's an enthusiast-driven brand, especially when you talk about Wrangler. So if I can make the people who work on them enthusiasts,
the rest is easy.
That's gold.
Here's a question from Steve B., who says, the entire industry is struggling to find fresh talent. Is the same true for Jeep design?
It's always a struggle to find good talent. Some of them come to us through different paths. We don't, like all the studios in our shop, throughout all the brands, people are welcome to come into Jeep, and we move them around infrequently. Some of them get in there and just really love that. Not everybody does, and I get that. But I wanted to work on cars, but it's good to move people around a lot. We get people come in occasionally, designers just like, I want to work on Jeep. And hopefully we made that cool somehow, I don't know. But they come from all different places.
Is it because there's a certain authenticity to the brand?
And that
you guys are doing different things. I mean, because let's face it, I mean, you can throw something at me after I say this, but I mean, at one point, mm-hmm. Jeeps fundamentally looked like major appliances. Mm-hmm. You know, they were just mm-hmm. square and,
you don't talk crap about the Cherokee. I mean, that was a cool car.
No, not that one much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but so now, I mean, as brands become more homogenous, as mm-hmm. they become more global vehicles, mm-hmm. that, you know, you guys are sort of off in your own space.
Yeah, and I kind of like that. You know, like Wrangler, for instance. Wrangler's got to look like a Wrangler. Mm. We're you know, putting a bow on it as we speak right now, and we went all over the map and tried all the wrong answers, and kept coming back to, man, it's just this is the right answer. It's got to look like a Wrangler.
It's like the Coke bottle.
911. It's got to look like a 911, right? If you don't, then that's wrong. Other vehicles that go into different spaces, for instance, the Compass has got to go worldwide and fit into that C segment, but it's a premium vehicle, and depending on the market, some markets it'll be not so premium, but that's okay. That's where they go.
Got another question here. Regarding the Cherokee, Ian mm-hmm. K says the Cherokee has a polarizing front end. Is
yes,
there
it does.
Any consideration to toning it down when it gets refreshed?
Yes. Cherokee was kind of intentionally polarizing to put a stake in the ground, because that vehicle really was built from a very foreign platform for us, and it was going into a market where it had to be a little bit of a standout. It's done real well, but I understand it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take some action on that. I think, what was the guy's name?
Well, it's just Ian K.
He'll be happy.
Okay. He also wants to know, based on what you were saying about the Wrangler, do you have any concern that Jeep enthusiasts will not like the all-new Wrangler?
I bet you they will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll bet you they will. I like it. And it's the Wrangler project comes around once a decade, right? It gets 10-year runs. So I've actually never worked on an all-new Wrangler.
Oh, no kidding.
So this is a great opportunity. And we've been thinking about it and wanting to get to it. And it's really just came down to fixing a lot of problems, getting customer input from the people that we like and know, and making it... You don't want to get too wide of an audience on Wrangler. It's still an enthusiast vehicle, but you don't want to make anybody mad either. But I think we'll be fine.
Did you get a lot of people upset when you put the extra set of doors on the Wrangler, though?
I was upset, too. I was like, I saw that, I'm like, that's not going to work. And I was wrong, right? I wasn't working on it.
Crazy
and
successful.
I don't know the genesis of that, but I'm guessing probably the G-Wagon, right?
The Mercedes G-Wagon, yeah.
Because...
Could be. People thought putting four doors on a pickup was crazy.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted
one. That was an old
one.
Man's truck back in the day, four-door pickup truck.
Yeah.
Six by sixes, they called them, right? Or six packs. Yeah. But, I remember clearly the first time I saw a four-door Wrangler, I thought, man, I think you guys are ruining it. But we just, now you got room for the kids and the dog? Yeah, instead of kids or dog, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
No, four-door Wrangler's been huge. And it kind of replaced the space that the old Cherokee did, the little square Cherokee. Much longer wheelbase, I get that, but it still has those kind of straight axle underpinnings to it. Yeah. Like, we get a lot of guys, they just want to buy a Wrangler because they want to tear it apart and make it into their own and put all the aftermarket parts on that. I like to think we're going to assist that. Yeah.
Assist that in what way?
Well, for instance, like You want to pull the door off? There's the bolts for the hinges right there on the outside of the car.
Cool.
That kind of a thing. A lot of it is really kind of a big Lego set, bolt together. And guys go crazy doing this stuff. I do too, but yeah. Very accessible vehicle. And its mission is clear, right? It's off-road. It's very easy to make a Jeep work off-road. It's making it work on-road. It's the hard part.
Mm-hmm. But still, it's such a clear brand. It's got to be like designing a Mustang, designing a Corvette, working on a 911.
Whole brand, though, yes.
You know what it's got to be. It's, you know, when you get when you get into other mass market products, because you want to go for as big a volume as you want.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to go for the lowest common denominator to try to get as many people to buy it. You don't have to do that with this brand.
Well, the trick is listening to why people won't go for it, right? And I don't, you know, if you make everybody happy with it, then you're probably going to not work out. But the Wrangler people, those people, making them happy and wanting to ditch their current one that they just bought to get this new one, that's my job, make that really. And I think we did, but too soon to talk about Wrangler.
Yeah. Hey, look, we got to take a quick break right here. We're going to come out of that. We've got Dr. Data.
Dr.
And then we've
Data.
Got more stuff to talk about with Mark Allen and all about Jeep design. Let's take that break.
This is 37 Seconds in the Autoline Garage.
Kiss the old Jeep Compass goodbye? Say hello to the new one. Bigger than a Renegade, smaller than the Cherokee, sure looks like a Grand Cherokee. That's the plan. Grand Cherokee looks, but at a lower price. Starts at $22,000. Loaded, it goes for $36,000. Only engine is a 4. Kind of buzzy with your foot to the floor, but look for 25 mpgs combined. Get the Trailhawk trim line and do some serious off-roading. You'll run out of courage before it runs out of capability. No more doing it on the cheap. The new Compass is a real Jeep.
This has been 37 Seconds in the Autoline Garage.
And, of course, we're promoting what we're doing here, car reviews in 37 seconds, that we're putting on our website and on YouTube. So there you got the our view of the Compass in 37 seconds.
Yeah. Boy, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
What a surprise that is.
Okay, drum roll, please. It's time for Dr. Data.
Okay, so since you don't know Mark, so this is the portion of the show where we will show some statistics, and you can sort of, and you too, Eric, to try to figure out what it is that I'm talking about. Now, I'll give you guys a clue before we bring the first slide up. And it has something to do with this week, and arguably it has something to do with vehicles like this, but in a good way for you guys.
Okay.
So, Carmen, please bring up the first slide.
Wow, okay. So I'll read it out for those listening to the audio portion. 573,784 crashes, 228,196 persons injured, 2,732 persons killed.
Yowza, Dr. Data, that's a little grim.
Yeah. So, what would these numbers signify? What do these things have in common here?
Okay, I'm going to say people killed off-roading. Injured, crashed, killed off-roading.
Nope. Remember what week this is now.
This has to do with daylight savings time.
No.
That was last week.
Yeah. Okay.
Spring?
Spring? Oh, deers. Deer?
No.
Oh, animals? No.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
You stumped
the,
us.
The answer is, and you can sort of, they did, I think they did a great job in that graphic, it's rain.
Oh.
The impact and rain over all vehicle crashes. 10% of all vehicle crashes are caused by rain.
Caused by rain?
Interesting.
See?
Good
so,
stats.
They're probably still caused by drivers, but rain.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm confident that we're more of those people in a Jeep Compass.
That
would not be so much an issue.
I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, so rain was, that's what we call
rain
summer.
Rain was nothing, So,
About Tuesday or something.
On average, there are more than 5.7 million vehicle crashes each year.
Huh.
22% are weather-related.
Oh, wow.
So they also look at snow, wet pavement, and so on. But I just thought, you know, if it were April showers, rain, May flowers. But first day of spring, I just figured we had to go with that number.
Close enough.
So there you go.
Very good.
Now you know something.
Dr. Data.
Okay, we got doctor. Another question here. This is After Hours guest 098, who asks, how about an update of the AMC Eagle? Could look really neat and give you a competitor to the Volkswagen Golf All-Track.
Easy. They're everywhere. They're called crossovers. Everybody has one. Probably not going to pull up any old dead brands, the Eagle, although I do like those things. It's really the genesis of crossover vehicle. A Subaru wagon is kind of an Eagle, in my opinion.
Good point. Yeah. Oh, here, we got a picture of an Eagle
wagon.
Look at
that handsome devil.
Boy.
Wow. That is a Hornet wagon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gussied up.
Well, that was one of the first cars that had all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think Audi might have been the first, but American Seems Motors like was right on the heels.
Weird things, yeah. Subarus, they did all-wheel drive.
Well, you know, the head of engineering back then was Roy Lunn. Mm-hmm. Roy Lunn is the guy that did the GT40 Fords at Le Mans in 66, 67, 68, whenever the years they cleaned up. So imagine that. The guy who ran the Ford Le Mans program ended up being the head of engineering at American Motors and did the first one of the first all-wheel drive passenger cars.
Yep. Yeah, maybe like put a Pacer body on a chassis.
Stop, Dr. Data.
That'd be awesome. That'd be really cool. You know, now, not all Jeeps have been successful through the years. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, what happened with the Jeep Commander?
Commander, I don't know that it was not successful. I'll tell you what it did do. It was a way to expand. We were just building one vehicle at Jefferson North Assembly Plant, and it was a way to build two. So it was essentially underneath the same WK platform, but to squeeze a third row into it meant that the third guy, his head, had to be quite tall. But then there was no allowance to move the vehicle. It came off sort of tall, narrow, and not quite long enough. There was no space behind that third seat.
Right.
But it was trying to get another, instead of planting
that up
front.
It was designed to the platform, not designed to what it should have been.
It was squeezed onto the platform and then jammed through the plant is a better way to put it. It was, I don't recall that the Grand Cherokee and that car were developed from day one up front. I think there was a rough plan in place, testing my memory, but the good thing about the Commander was, and our planning people will tell you, it brought us the highest household income people to the Jeep brand. So I know there's room on top for us to go.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Especially these days.
We just got to act on it.
Yeah. You know, that was, almost a decade ago, right? A decade ago that you did the Commander?
Six or seven, something like that.
Okay, so over a decade ago, or about a decade ago. Yeah. But the Jeep brand has grown.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's got a lot more
surprised us on the inside well as the outside. And SUVs are red hot right now and SUV-like things. But, we're benefiting right now from market conditions as well.
So now you have more headroom in terms of where you can go with the brand. I mean,
I see what you did there.
Can you talk about the Wagoneer, like the challenge of designing something to compete on the high end?
Probably too soon to talk about that product. Yeah.
Any hints at all?
I just can't even go there at the moment.
Okay, let's go back to something you can talk about.
Yeah.
Just pure design.
Yeah.
We were talking a bit before the show. You were looking at some of the schematics we got here in the studio and talking about how much clay designing has changed.
Yeah.
What's changed and why are you still using clay?
What has changed is just how we used to just roll in a big block and start carving on it. Now we start way sooner with electronics, and I can get to why we do that. The other thing is, why do we do it? Because it's still important to, fix things that are, you got to see it in 3D. I'm making a 3D product, and you've got to see it in 3D. I've looked at a lot of stuff on the tube, and it still fools you a little bit. You've got to mill it out and look at it. And also, probably the most important thing, the most important tool we have is the courtyard, where we roll the vehicle outside, get back from it, you know,
on in the natural sunlight or daylight.
Yes, and look at it and study it. It's a big object. But what we do now is we still do hand sketches, and I will always do that. I hope. In my staff meeting, you know, the guys are all sketching still. I do it when
I'm on the phone. So sketching on paper or sketching on
paper,
a tablet?
Ballpoint pen, piece of bond paper. Right. Usually the back of my schedule or staff notes. I did this in history class in high school, too, so it's the same thing.
Middle school and high school, of course.
Exactly. And then that sketch, what's different now, though, is the guys coming out of college have 3D training, and although they don't need to build a vehicle exactly, completely in the tube, the computer, shorthand is tube, but they can at least huck together their 3D model and then trade that with a professional modeler, and we'll go back and forth, take out at some point and mill that in clay, and then fix all the problems that occur by hand in clay, but then quickly scan that and go back into the tube. Rather than just starting with a big hunk of clay and carving away at it, it's just way faster and it's more accurate. And then I can start trading information with the engineers way sooner than what we have before. Clay's not going to go away. I don't see it going away. There was a push in the 90s to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. No one could ever get there. And you don't want to see that. That would be terrible. It's still necessary to get a 3D thing.
Some designers have told me they physically have to touch the clay with their hands to feel the design.
Mm-hmm. But if I see something in the computer and I'm suspect of an area or on a door or a fender or a transition somehow, then I've got to go to the clay and look at it, and it'll tell you what's right or wrong with it. But it's, again, it's just labor. Going into a clay and starting there, it's a lot faster to do it in the tube and go back and forth.
So another detailed question. When you push it out in the courtyard, is the courtyard on the north side of the building?
It is on the north side of the building.
Because I had somebody tell me years ago that that's where you want your courtyard, because it tends to be in shadow from the building.
Yep.
Exactly. So you're not getting hot spots in direct sunlight.
And the clay will melt in the sun.
Oh, well, maybe that's the real reason.
Yeah. You get it hot enough and then send it to the wind tunnel, and then your work is done. But, you got to have the light laying on it the right way. And we'll move it around, or we've got a turntable where we can spin it around. But, yeah, you want to stay out of the shadows.
Okay, so for somebody who is not quite following what we're talking about here, so you guys have this big
monsters,
block of clay.
Full-size hunk of clay.
That's milled out
by
a torus machine, and so there you have it. Okay. But how do you make it look like that?
We have a film that we can put on it, apply to it. And it's basically like if you ever built a model kit as a kid, you dip it in water. It's a big sheet, and it comes in. You can either get it in the color you want it or paint it with automotive paint. And basically you're laying paint on the car.
So it's like a wrap.
It's like a wrap, yeah. And any colors. We also have chrome. If you got to have chrome, the truck guys use a lot of that.
Yeah.
But you can dress a clay model up to from 100 feet. It looks pretty much like a car. There's still differences, but it's your question. Clay, I don't see it leaving right away.
Do you put tires and wheels on it?
Absolutely.
I mean, real tires and wheels?
Real tires and wheels. There's no real suspension to it,
right.
But it's underneath is a big plywood box with a bunch of foam onto it. We smear the clay onto it, but yeah.
What do you do with the models when you're finished? Do you hold on to them?
No, we'll keep the armature, the rolling chassis with the axles and wheels on it, but take the plywood box and throw that away. It's all just clay and foam. Yeah.
So there's no big warehouse full of these.
Send it to China.
These models.
Yeah.
So we got another question here.
There is a big warehouse, by the way. Yeah.
AAH guest 098 also wants to know, if you're struggling for fresh talent, any hope for someone who wants to make a career change at 40?
Oh, really?
He says, or do y'all have to, I'm paraphrasing here, Can you only enter as a young person fresh out of CCS or ACD? I don't know what ACD is.
Probably Art Center.
Art Center, sure. Yeah. Art Center School. Sure.
Send your portfolio for equal opportunity. But it's tough to compete. It really is.
Do kids want to design cars or do they want to design iPhones?
They still want to design cars. There's still car programs. There's more now than there ever was. And there's more than cars. There's all kinds of components and pieces and parts. And
I'll give you my pitch. Door hinges. And seat tracks. They're as ugly as they get. And we all see them.
On a Wrangler, I put them on the outside.
Well, the Wrangler is one exception. But I'm telling you, even on a lot of luxury cars, I look at the door hinges and it's like, yuck. Mm-hmm. And you see it every time you open the door. And you see the seat tracks if you move the seat back enough.
Yep.
And they're just ugly.
Yep.
So there's
seat
my
tracks,
pitch.
I agree with you. Door hinges, I guess I don't look at a lot of them. But, yeah. I'm always wowed by the interior.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, you get on boats and all the hardware is so well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's expensive, too, though.
Very.
So are the hinges designed or are they engineered?
They are engineered.
So.
Yeah. I don't think we get any input. Only where they're at. But, except for a Wrangler, where we actually had a guy designing the hinges.
Right.
Because it's an important part.
But that's an exterior design feature, right?
I was told, it was before my time, when they were doing the YJ, which was the first Wrangler, the square headlight Wrangler, they did a model where they took all the hinges and bobbles and bolts on, all completely made the car smooth and took it to a research clinic, and people were furious. They hated it. So it's like, I wasn't part of that. I wasn't around at that time, but I believe that would still be true.
I'll bet it would.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of what gives the Wrangler its authenticity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, just that look. Press it's functional.
Yeah. Try to keep the plastic off of it.
Let's see. We've got lots of questions here coming in.
Right.
Auto LRM wants to know, great-looking vehicle. Why didn't FCA equip it with a better engine?
Not my department. You got a question about color or something?
I figured that might be it, but I figured I'd ask it. Here's an interesting one. Royal with Cheese wants to know, why don't they ever
design... I know the movie reference. Do you guys know that?
No.
No?
No.
Pulp Fiction?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which doesn't make sense. It'd be fromage, but whatever. Mm-hmm.
Why don't they ever design a car with a fuel filler on both sides?
Jack did that. Jag sedans did that for years.
That's right. On the top of the trunk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I believe there's one tank, just two fillers.
Okay, now I understand why you wouldn't do it. I mean, it's cost, it's tooling, and blah, blah, blah. How does the filler door end up on which side of the vehicle?
Good question. Like this vehicle, it's on the passenger side because it was a Fiat platform that came to us. All of our other vehicles, that we try to get it on the driver's side. That's the preferred side, but... I don't know why.
Isn't it predicated on where the exhaust pipe is?
It's usually opposite of the exhaust pipe, and except for like a dual exhaust car. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. You're right.
Hot exhaust, fuel?
I don't know. Yeah.
Conflagration of the driver, not a good thing.
Let's see. What else? We've got other things here. Let's see.
Remember a Model A, the dash was the fuel tank, right? That was genius,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No.
The dashboard, the top of the cowl was
the Ford Model A.
Ford Model A, yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
right
pretty
above
wild.
Your knees. On a Jeep, on a the early flat fenders, you sat on top of the gas tank, and everybody smoked, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we got to take another quick break right now. Got to give a shout out to our friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back talking about Jeep design. And, Mark, one of the things we haven't gotten into yet in this discussion is lighting.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on in lighting
right
now.
Hard to keep up. Yeah. We were working on a program that got going along, and we had probably the most advanced lighting on it ever. We, for various reasons, stalled out on the program. When we came back to it, the technology had already changed in like a year and a half. It's crazy. For so long, it was just a stable thing, right? And I think even sealed beam headlights just in everything, bulbs and the taillights. Light generation comes from several different sources now.
And they're design elements. I mean, headlights were always design elements, but not like they are today.
Yeah, and I credit probably the leader on that was Audi for a long time. They were really pushing it. Where the lights started to look like cameras and very high tech became an important design element. But it's for a long time it was kind of a struggle, I think. But now it's you can spend as much as you want on lighting. I think some of our vehicles they're just hundreds and hundreds of dollars into the headlights, which wasn't the case for a long time. But the allowance for us is we can get just about any shape or design we want. I mean, look, Cadillac brought back vertical headlights. That's so cool.
It is.
I think that's neat that they did that.
The Blade, they call it.
Yeah, the Blade, which was like, what was the car, 68 Eldorado, that taillight, which was a Blade. Really cool.
You guys did a concept, I think, called the Luminator, that played around not just with the headlights, but the taillights as well.
Yeah, it's a Wrangler that we're bringing to Moab, actually, and we'll try that out at night. What you're seeing now is, if you've seen the adaptive headlights, those are really cool. It's basically you're driving around with your high beams on all the time, and then if a car comes along, it just shuts off the lights and keeps them in a shadow. Pretty cool technology.
That's pretty cool technology. Yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah, and taillights are going crazy with, you know, OLEDs, and they're moving the lights around. It's hard to keep up with. It really is.
So does the technology drive the design, or does the design drive the technology? Meaning, we want something that looks like this, figure out how to do it, or, hey, look, we got this stuff, and you could do something like that.
The answer is both. Both are in play. The design, our design community, we're asking for, through sketches and stuff like that, we're asking for challenges to the lighting. But then the lighting suppliers are staying ahead of it and bringing us technology all the time. We'll have tech shows frequently, and they'll bring in lighting that's either available now or is going to be in the very near future.
Okay, Chris
it's
wrote
moving
in.
Around the car too, which is not, it's not just front and back, it's moving around the car as well. So
I want to get these questions, and we can come back to that thread in a minute. But Chris says, I'm ready to lay down good money for a Wrangler hardtop with a panoramic sunroof. Dare I dream?
He can dream. He can dream. Yeah.
So besides lighting and some of the other stuff we've talked about, what are some of the other trends that you see in design?
Honestly, right now, I was coming on to the studio today. Color, I think, is huge right now. And for a long time, color was almost dead. And when I talk about color, of course, silver and white are always going to be big players.
And black.
And I think some models we offer like three different versions of gray. But just pure color back in there. Mustang is really good with color. We do a lot with Wrangler with color. When I'm talking about
Charger and Challenger too, have done a lot with color.
Yeah, there's sort of like I guess it's a firewall with color. These cartoon colors work up to a certain price tag, say I don't know, let's call it upper 20s, and then it's kind of bad. Until you get like to a supercar at $100,000, it's okay to have bright green. I don't know why that is, but
I think I got one idea, because it's car dealers who buy cars, right? They buy from the factory, and they want to move something, so they want a color that they know anybody will compromise with. When you get into the $100,000 or $200,000 and $300,000 whatever exotic cars, it's that individual.
I want
buying
you to see what I bought.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. It's the extrovert. Color can be functional too. I mean, you know, the Smile States, they largely sell white, silver. What we were talking about on the roof here earlier. I'm interested in doing different colors on the roof. Say, if I wanted to live in Phoenix and have a darker colored vehicle, but if I have a lighter colored roof, does that work? Wranglers, we're just starting to do white roofs on Wranglers for that very reason, because a Wrangler roof is actually, you know, a piece of plastic, and you feel the heat through it. We try to mitigate that with some panels in between, but color is a huge. It's functional.
Why do you think the change happened? You said color used to be dead, and then it's come back.
Part of it's just economic optimism, honestly. But it's if you don't put it out there, how are you going to know? You can do all the forecasting you want. But until you actually start trying, and we dipped our toe into brighter colors, especially on Wrangler, and it paid off. And we will run really extroverted colors for a short amount of time, knowing you'll saturate the purple Wrangler market about 2 weeks, right? But then shut it off and then throw another color in there. Especially in a Wrangler where it runs in 10-year cycles, you've got to do something. But color technology, the Zerillics that go in the paint or the pearls and stuff like that, that's more, a lot of that has to be plant. You're altering the plant to put another coat on the car. That could get very, very expensive.
Well, there aren't a whole lot of orange cars out there, and here we have.
No, but here's one right here.
Yeah.
Even that, I mean, we'll sell. That'll be, not everybody wants an orange Compass, but a few extroverts really do. We'll offer it really only on, I think, Sport and on a Trailhawk, but on a Limited, you wouldn't get that.
Question I got is, you think there's any chance for wraps in the future? And you see it in some of the exotic cars,
yeah.
You know, and they tend to be very bright colors. But it seems to me that, especially for an off-road vehicle, if it got all scratched up, you pull the wrap off, you put another one on.
But the wraps are as expensive as a paint job, and there's a due date on them. They last for about, I want to say, four years
or so. Right?
And they start to degrade. The paint has just gotten very, very robust, the urethane paints on the car, especially with clear coat. Mm-hmm. You can usually scratch up a Jeep pretty good and rub it out, and you're fine. But and I think it's probably pretty labor intensive, especially for production. I've always got to be thinking about production, but certainly the wrap industry is alive and well. To rapidly change the look of my Lamborghini or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. We got another question here. Wright Knight says the Wrangler is growing in size over the years. Mm-hmm. So, is there a place for a smaller, full-framed, perhaps Willys model, based on a more compact rear-drive base platform?
That would be cool.
Oh, Wright Knight, I like your question. He also points out this would allow
a
small series of pickups and other models could be built off it. That's the beauty of frames.
Agree.
Yeah.
I'll just agree. Nothing we haven't thought about.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet you guys have got more ideas than you can possibly execute on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's part of the Moab thing, right? We're just spilling out with great ideas, but that's fine.
Well, I know, you know, Jeep probably in another year and a half will be close to 2 million units a year globally, which is, I mean, that's a car company in itself.
As people know, I mean, China, we'll sell more Jeeps in China than we will in the NAFTA market, whatever we were going to call the NAFTA market.
Right.
But it's a
market previously known as NAFTA.
it's still amazing for us, right? And again, real humble beginnings for Jeep. It was never meant to be this powerhouse that it is right now, but happy to be part of it.
But it would all have design out of Auburn Hills.
Absolutely, yeah. We're working on a project that will probably be just in China, but it still came from our shop here. Mm. You can't outsource that.
No. No, not you can't outsource design DNA.
No.
It's got to be from within.
Yeah.
Do you bring, do you have any designers from outside Southeast Michigan, folks who have come from overseas? Or?
Our company, we have 4 design centers globally, and they all get involved at some point in the vehicle, be it just in market adjustments or even supplying ideas for whatever that market is. Does that make sense? I mean, I've got people on the ground in China, South America, and of course in Italy, and all of them have active Jeep programs going on, probably smaller things than not full vehicles, but there's a lot of maintenance to these things. But I need to know from, say, South America what works and what doesn't for them in Brazil specifically. Renegade, we're going to have to make some adjustments on that vehicle that we didn't foresee, but they're experts in their market. China, same thing. I'm not an expert by any means of China, but I've got people on the ground there that help feed us information. I can't possibly know it all.
Well, good. We're going to have to wrap this show up now. But Mark Allen, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks
talking
for having
all
me.
About yeah. The new Compass and,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Jeep design
we're
and
proud of
just
her.
Design in general.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a great run for us anyway. Yeah. It's nice to be part of, and I keep saying it's an enthusiast brand, and I think that's the biggest attraction mm-hmm. for me.
And it does have Easter eggs, so just for
it does have Easter eggs. I showed you one.
You did.
Yeah. I won't show many people.
Yeah.
You're special.
No, let the public discover
it. They know they're there, so.
Yeah, they're there.
Shh. Eric Lawrence, thanks so much for stopping by and being on After Hours. Good having you here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And Gary, let's keep on doing it. This is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Do it next week.
Good deal. And we want to invite all of you back again when we do it.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.